The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Welcome to the show about money. I am Wolfgang Klein. Jack Hardle by my side. We help people just like you build wealth. You know, it's pretty simple stuff. I am going to say it on every single show. You want to build wealth, you got to get out of bed, go to work, put some money aside called saving and invest it. And a key to it all, of course, then if you want to make some more money, get educated. And that is becoming such a challenge for our youth. I just saw a headline that Canada is looking to attract 1.4 million foreign students to be educated in this beautiful country of ours. And well, that means less students for our own people. And that is something that I scratch my head at. If our people don't get educated, their earning potential is basically cut in half, which makes my job more difficult. But you know something, truth be told, even if you save and invest $5 a day, $5 a day for 40 years, that's $750,000 in the S&P 500. I had a 9% return. My good friend, Sandy McIntyre, has a phrase for something like that, and that's called the power of small numbers. Sandy McIntyre is a retired strategist, but he's not retired. His mind is racing at full-on warp speed. He does spend much of his time now in the world of philanthropy, Lochte Foundation. But formerly, we knew him as the strategist at CI Investments and Century Select prior to. Sandy McIntyre, welcome back to Hi-Fi Radio. It is the fall time and the market is falling. Talk to us.
I was trying to think of a theme to sort of structure our conversation this morning. And I go back to a bit of advice that was given to me at the start of my career as an investment counselor. I had a chief investment officer, James Cameron, at Jones Heward at the time. And he took me aside and said, Sandy, every decision you make is binary. You will be right or you will be wrong. The more rapidly you sequence decisions, the higher the likelihood that you make a series of bad decisions. Make sure the first decision you make is right.
That's interesting speak.
Well, it comes to my view on trading securities. Why are you trading them? Are you hoping that somebody else is going to pay you a higher price at a future date for something that you don't understand? Or are you purchasing the earnings power, the economic rent that a business extracts from the economy? I prefer the latter. And if I can calculate the economic rent at a level that is a suitable risk premium to my risk-free rate of return, so let's say a 90-day T-bill, then I will buy the economic rent and live with it. And I'll live with it through multiple cycles, so long as the business remains a valid business. This sort of thinking led to my response to a phone call from my mother back in March of 2009. The comment was, Sandy, I have to sell everything. And the my reply was, why? Because it's going down. At the time, I was a big fan of a UK show on cars called Top Gear. And I gave her a challenge. I said, Mom, I want you to go to Yorkdale on the weekend. And if you can tell me that all economic activity is stopped, then I'll let you sell something. She called the next week, and her, in her words, Sandy, that was a horrible experience. It took me forever to find a parking spot, and there are all awful people in there with bags bumping into me. What am I buying? I changed the narrative. There's a fashion in the media to be negative, and you and I know that the outcome of long-term investing is a positive slope of roughly 9% from lower left to upper right. And yes, it varies, but if you keep your money invested, it's time on the water that wins. It's time in the market that wins.
Yeah, it really is. A friend of mine wrote a book, Time In, Time Out, and the people said, well, the time up part, not so, because time on the water, Jack likes that phrase as well. You know, but you know what gets me, Sandy? The market has idiosyncrasies, and we are able to get the Morgan Stanley research, which is amazing research. Wall Street research is well coveted, certainly on Bay Street. But their analysts at the very bottom talk about what drives the stock and the sector that they're focused on, and they have one category called idiosyncrasies, and often that's over 50% of the movement of the stock. I've now parlayed that into deep value that is going lower and super expensive stuff that's going higher. FICO, your credit scores. If you're bored, Sandy, pull up that chart. FICO in the United States is the symbol. I'm jinxing it, but I own the stock across my book. Credit scores trades at about 45 times earnings, has decent growth, I don't know, 10 or 15% revenue growth, nice moat around it, very predictable. Market's paying a lot of money for that stock, and that stock does not retreat. Again, I'm jinxing it. The market gods are going to hit me with a couple lightning bolts. The stock will get cut in half, I'm sure, next week. I have that effect, the stench of the wolf. But then you look at the Canadian banks and the U.S. banks, for that matter, J.P. Morgan, Royal Bank, pick your border, pick your brand leader. Cheaper than chips. Cheap, cheap, cheap. The market does not care. It doesn't want them. Let's talk about sentiment and the force it can have on markets. And should you participate in sentiment or just, as you said, just ignore it and focus on the economic rent?
I've never found that trading on sentiment has been successful for me. A lot of the time, people would be asking me, what do I do about the budget? Or what do I do about the upcoming election? And I can't think of an instance when the budget has materially affected the broad market. There have been instances where specific items in budgets have affected particular sectors, like in the early 80s with Pierre Trudeau's energy attack, National Energy Plan.
I remember that.
Yeah. We actually walked into the office the day after the budget and sold every energy stock in our portfolios. There was no way that their economics were going to survive under the regime that was being imposed by Ottawa, but that's an outlying experience as opposed to the reality of if the U.S. manages to avoid a government shutdown at the end of September, how is that going to affect the broad economy? Well, it's going to affect civil servants. It's going to affect the military. It's going to affect government spending. And it's going to be solved relatively quickly, likely through the embarrassment of the lunatics who shut it down.
Just had a piece across our desk on that, talking about government shutdowns. So yeah, basically, it is going to happen. And guess what? Market, during every market government shutdown, went higher. I totally agree with you, Sandy, in terms of politics. Don't try to invest around it. Generally speaking, every now and then, an outlying setup, perhaps to go long or short something within a subsector, within the market. But I don't get involved in politics. I'm sensing people are getting a little nervous again, both politically and geopolitically. there's always been reason to be concerned politically and geopolitically, so I can't participate in that. But again, I want to respect market, because Wall Street's loaded with good cliches. You sort of threw out a few euphemisms, lines that they use on Wall Street, but you know, the trend is your friend. Last year, the market hated tech stocks. Everyone was out to selling tech. Sentiment turned in January, put on the tech trade. If you didn't, you missed out. The big FANG stocks were being eviscerated last year. This year, they drove the bus. If you didn't have the FANG stocks, you missed out. So I go back to that. Those are sentiment shifts. I do respect them, and I will follow trend and gravitate towards that, hopefully early, not late. It's Hi-Fi Radio. It's a show about money. We're chatting with Sandy McIntyre, a very seasoned investor, market strategist, good friend of Hi-Fi Radio. He's now spending his time giving back to society with his foundation, Lock Tay. But he's very much focused on markets, and he always enjoys hanging out with Jack and I on the show. We'll check in with Jack when we get back as well. Quick break, pay some bills around here. Show about money shall return. Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Money. Welcome back. Apparently some people aren't paying their car loans. Jack, I got a call from one of our clients, picked up a story probably in the National Post, maybe in the Toronto Star, how Bank of Montreal is clamping down on its auto loan business because, well, there's rising defaults. That's where people don't pay their bills. Jack, Sandy, want to talk a little bit about the automotive industry. I throw it over to you.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, in the middle of transitioning, I would say, to electric vehicles, but you've got the traditional automakers, the labor actually getting some inflationary pressure there and pushing back on the automotive manufacturers. So, Sandy, what's your perspective there? It looks like structural inflation to me. Does that mean rates are higher for longer?
I think we're actually getting rates correctly priced for the risk that you take on a fixed income investment. For a very long period of time, you had no real return in the bond market. What the unions are doing is correct in the sense in that they are in the midst of a transition to a new manufacturing model that takes a vehicle that has X number of parts, the traditional internal combustion engine and its attachments, and going to an electric vehicle that has something like 40%, 50% fewer parts.
That's amazing.
And the most of the parts are maintenance free. They're trying to protect their employment against companies that are opening facilities in the United States that are non-union. And you know, give you an example. Tesla is a non-union shop. It's worth $894 billion. And its market share is less than 1%. Mercedes is a union shop in Europe, it's non-union in the States. It's a market cap of $72 billion. I'm not sure what its market share is, but its market share of the luxury market is pretty dominant. You take General Motors, and it has a market capitalization of $45 billion. And it has dominant market share in the United States. You take Ford, it has a capitalization of $49 billion, and it sells the best-selling vehicle in the United States.
What, the 150?
Yeah, 150.
Yeah.
Now, which company is misvalued?
Yeah, it's incredible. That's a great, it's amazing, isn't it? But so what do you think, Sandy? Let's ask you that question. How is Tesla, in your opinion, misvalued?
I personally would not own it. I do not see a material barrier to Mercedes eating its lunch. And if you look at the Mercedes model lineup as it's rolling out over the next 2 to 3 years, and I'm using Mercedes consciously because it sells at a similar price point, they are going to have they already have viable alternatives for the Tesla SUV, and they're in the midst of viable alternatives for the Tesla sedans. Now, whether or not EVs are carbon neutral is something that needs to be discussed. I believe that their carbon footprint is not correctly calculated.
I agree with you. It's not.
By government policy. But if they are the succeeding vehicle, it's going to be a very long transition. Electric's market share is below 2%. And when I go to my cottage near Midland, I don't see any EVs. I see a ton of Rams. I see a ton of F-150s. Lots of decent-sized SUVs. And if you look at the plants that the union is striking, they're striking the high profit margin vehicles.
You know, so Sandy, I'll say a couple of things. Number one, we do own actually Mercedes-Benz stock in our portfolio, and it pays about an 8% dividend yield. I'll tell you something else that's interesting, a little market nuance for you. It pays that dividend once a year. So you get your full 8% paid once a year. So you could, if the stock is down and perhaps a month or two before dividend pay, you purchase that 8% over a two-month hold times six. That's an annualized incredible return just on the dividend alone. But I was in Portugal in May, and I, in one of those executive limos, picked us up to take us to a restaurant. I was in an ES5 sedan. It's a 160,000 euro vehicle, loaded to the nines with technology. And in speaking with the owner, he described to me the amount of joint venture activity that Mercedes has participated in with Tesla. So they have done a lot of work together. And then Mercedes says, fine, you've trained me on the EV side of things, I'm just going to take it to the luxury level. So they got EV down, but they continue to dominate luxury. So it's interesting you raised that point. But Jack, you did a good job highlighting that Morgan Stanley piece on Tesla's Dojo. Do you want to highlight a few key factors from that report as to what makes Dojo such a pretty phenomenal potential game changer for Tesla?
Sure. I mean, it's artificial intelligence that's going to be self-driving for Tesla. So that's the engine that is going to provide, or Tesla's going to use to provide their self-driving vehicle. And not only are they going to do that, you've seen with the charging network, other manufacturers are going to be looking at licensing it. So I do think that I think Tesla's got a lot more under the hood than investors are appreciating. Whether or not that is all priced in remains to be seen. But, you know, the software that they have, the artificial intelligence that they have, the charging networks, there's so much more involved. And
The Dojo is, I want to talk a little bit more specifically about what the Dojo is. It is this monstrous supercomputer that is artificially educating itself by grabbing in a free flow of data. And the word Dojo, again, that's an amazing report. That word Dojo, I think it means where it begins. Or where it happens.
It's like a gym. It's a training area.
It's a training area.
So it's a training
area.
Isn't
that interesting?
Right?
They're
training back to martial arts.
The supercomputer is training itself, but also there's a huge cost benefit. They spoke about cost benefits in this dojo. And I think they're saying something to the effect of about a 40% cost advantage over some other type of wafer. I don't know if you got
that. Morgan Stanley really got excited about that, increased their target quite high. There was some pushback on that from other analysts as well, just saying that it's going to take longer for this to actually happen. Mm-hmm. So, that is what makes a market, though, Wolf.
But Tesla, so let's go to Sandy. Tesla, I'm sure you know this, is not really a car company. It really is a technology disruptive model.
Oh, I fully agree with you on that. We're completely ignoring at this point the solar aspect of Tesla, the possibility of distributed power. And that's just fallen right off the radar screen. But it is, to me, a very valid business line.
Incredible brand. And again, it's funny that you mentioned you don't see many EVs in Midland. I don't know anyone who has a cottage in Midland. I'll say that to you, Sandy. But I will say, I was driving up the 400 not too long ago, and in front of me were three Teslas. So about five lanes? Three lanes taken by Tesla right in front of us. I was actually quite impressed. In Europe, the amount of new car participants, Sandy, how about that? The big three dominated the world back in my early career of the late 80s. It was the big three automakers. You throughout your career, Sandy, it was the big three automakers. And the dominance and the importance of automotive in Ontario cannot be understated. How this province survived without automotive is a whole other discussion. But again, when you travel Europe, you see these brands of vehicles you've never, ever seen before. And showrooms for them, like beautiful glass showrooms where you can walk in and actually touch these vehicles. So for an industry, Sandy, that was three in North America, a few in Japan, and a few in Germany, that has become once again highly fragmented. What do you think of that?
The EV is an ideal disruptor leading to fragmentation. You do not need the precision manufacturing tolerances for a high RPM internal combustion engine. What you're dealing with is off-the-shelf electric motors, a battery pack, off-the-shelf brakes, off-the-shelf discs, rims, tires. And you design and you assemble your own body to put
you,
around.
You think you can do a lot of pick and play with building electric automotive today?
Yeah.
Really? I thought Tesla said the opposite.
I'm going to say it's a much more simpler technology in an electric vehicle.
Correct.
Absolutely. And that's what's going to drive the cost reductions over time. So I think that getting back to Sandy's original point about the unions, I think the unions they're shooting themselves in the foot here, raising rates as much as they are, because you're looking at lower price electric vehicles, better manufacturers, better products. And guess what Elon Musk is doing right now? Gaining market share by cutting price.
Yeah.
He's cutting price.
Yep.
So, and you know why he's doing that?
The market share.
Well, gain market share. And then also, later on, benefiting from the network effect of being able to get all that information in the dojo, plus all the other information that they're going to be able to gather.
His subscription model is also a very, very viable business model. Software, subscription, monthly bills, that's very much part
of it. Updating the technology on a monthly basis.
Yeah, it's an incredible, incredible business model. But Sandy, did you ever expect to see such fragmentation in automotive? I never did. Industry, who would have thought such change would have come to it?
Not when the barriers to entry were
so high. They were huge.
But I'm seeing on the road in Oakville, Polestars. There's a Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer that's bringing in sport utilities. I can't remember the name of it. There's a luxury.
So you said a Vietnamese brand.
A Vietnamese brand.
Wow.
The Polestar is, I believe, owned by China, because Chinese owns Volvo, and Polestar, I think, is slightly related to Volvo. It used to be a high-performance brand under the Volvo moniker. I really do believe that the opportunity is here for new entrants. And I agree with Jack that they're not going to develop their own autonomous driving programs. They're going to license it.
Yeah, 100%.
And the brains is going to be either a Mercedes brain or a Tesla brain, but somebody who manages to get it right over the next 5 years.
Sandy McIntyre is spending some time with us this Saturday night. He is a veteran loaded with sage advice and wisdom. It's an absolute delight for Jack and I to be able to spend time with Sandy. And guess what? We get to share that with you. A little unplugged money management session on Hi-Fi Radio. That's what we do each and every Saturday night. A little workshop, Albert, when it comes to cash. Stay tuned. More show right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Let the good times roll.
Let them indeed roll. This is Hi-Fi Radio, Saturday night. I love the month of September. It's actually, I think, one of the best months of the year. I wish I was Sandy McIntyre. If I was Sandy McIntyre, I'd do a little radio with the Wolfman and Jack, but I'd be traveling the world, and this is the month to travel. Sandy, why don't you get on a plane and go to Europe for me? Spend a couple of weeks, you know, check things out. The tourists are gone. The weather's great. The prices are cheaper. And apparently they're going into...
back on Tuesday.
Yeah, from Europe?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Let's talk about it. Where were you? Tell me all about it. And I saw no pictures on Facebook. Come on. Let's go. Get them up.
Well, a cruise from Amsterdam to Budapest on the Rhine, Maine, and Danube with Viking. I would say the average age was in the 60s. The level of service was very good. And luckily, we did not have to do any busing from ship to ship. The water levels were enabled us to go right through.
I'm going to say something. You're going to laugh. I had a client call. Was it last? Jack's laughing right now. I had a client call probably about a year ago. Oh my God, Wolf, sell everything. The Rhine is drying up. They can't get the ships through. The economy is going to stop. Sell everything. The Rhine is dry. I kid you not, Sandy. I get these calls.
It was right at the start of the Ukraine war. That's how I remember that.
The Rhine is dry. I said, come on. The Rhine is dry. You're talking Germany here. If it goes dry, they'll figure out how to move stuff. They're pretty good at that logistics, you know, right branchy, left brain thinking. They're okay with that stuff. Don't worry about the nuances around the world. Drive yourself. Like, Sandy, we could really drive ourselves nuts worrying. Just worrying about all kinds of things.
But that's the geopolitics that Sandy was talking about.
I know. That's why I mentioned it.
That's why it's easy for retail investors to get caught up in it, because it is the headline news. It's on the front page.
Yeah.
The Rhine's drying up, or whatever the news is. Right?
That wasn't even front page. You just called it. But again, and Sandy, you said it at the open. I'm going to repeat the statement. They learned this, I think, in the 20s. Extra, extra. Read all about it. Guy in the street, he learned he will sell more newspapers if he has an alarming story. Guess what? Today, approximately 500,000 airplanes will safely land. Not a story. That's not a story. One plane crashes. That's a story. Are you kidding me? To be able to land safely 500,000 airplanes every day, I think it is a story. We just take it for granted. But anyway, I want to segue, Sandy. You want to talk about the new economy? I love new. New is a good way to make money because everyone's a winner at the beginning. What's catching your eyes in the new economy, Sandy?
Well, there's one news item from today. It was Rupert Murdoch has resigned as chairman of Fox News. And the reason he's resigned as chairman is the lawsuits around fake news are just eviscerating the company.
Mm-hmm.
And the pension plans that own Fox shares are suing the directors and management of Fox for restitution of the penalties being paid back into the company, because it was their decisions that resulted in the Smartmatic payment and stuff like that. To go back to your pick for the song, the album cover for the Cars' Good Times Roll is a smiling woman with her hand over her forehead.
Oh, you're good.
With red lips, red
You're really good. Are you, look, Sandy, are you cheating? Jack and I are staring at her right now.
And a Lucite steering wheel.
Oh, my God. Sandy. Wow.
I don't know whether it's a
GM. He doesn't make this stuff up, people.
Or a Chrysler, but...
You can't tell. You cannot tell.
Cannot tell, but if you were to take that picture today, it would be red lipstick, red nail polish, smiling woman, and likely a Tesla steering wheel or a Mercedes steering wheel.
All right, so where are you going with this?
The new economy constantly evolves, and you want to evolve with it. I would say that if I look at the F-150s and the Rams that are being driven around Ontario, the company that's making them has a really difficult transition into the new economy.
How about the Sony and Walkman? They couldn't do it.
They couldn't do it.
It's amazing. They couldn't do it, the Sony Walkman.
You want a portion of your portfolio in disruptors.
Yep.
You want a portion of your portfolio in what I call the structures of everyday life.
Yep, the toll booths that you often talk about.
Yeah, the stuff that you just have to spend money on.
Yep.
And
what about McDonald's? What do you think of that stock, Sandy?
I don't really think about McDonald's because I don't go there. Actually, I shouldn't say that. If I take the GO train in, I'll go to the drive-through and get a bacon and egg bagel and a coffee,
mm-hmm.
and have my breakfast on the train while I'm going into the city.
People like when you open up that packaging on the train. They must love it for that. A little steam coming out of it.
I would say for most people, or for a lot of people, it is a structure of everyday life, whether or not you use it every day or week or month. People go to McDonald's. There's light-ups there. We can all appreciate that.
Oh, are you kidding? It's an incredible brand, McDonald's. I say that's a staple and a half.
Yeah, the disruptors, new technology, growth, that tends to be challenging for a lot of people to appreciate.
Yep.
And I'm going to say that's where you do want to hire a professional that has process and is able to identify those trends. Often it is through momentum. Often it is through price and volume and technicals, because it takes longer sometimes for the fundamentals to actually come to fruition, especially with those tech and growth stocks.
Yeah, no, it can be a very exciting space, but you have to catch it properly. You have to true. Sandy, you said at the very onset of our show, you spoke about making correct decisions. And the less decisions, hopefully the probability of making right ones increases. But that first decision can be key to the outcome. And I always say buying is more important than selling. If you buy correctly, the selling will be easy. You'll make money, in other words. But if you buy incorrectly, if you buy at a peak, it could be a long time a coming. I don't have to play that on the next track. It'd be a long time coming to get back to even. I'm not kidding you. If you bought the NASDAQ at the 2000 peak, I think it was about a 15-year window you had to wait. The Nikkei never bested its peak since 1988, 89. Sandy, you remember those days?
Yeah.
So it's remarkable. Entry point really, really matters. Sandy, my good friend, we have to hoppity hop here. We do got another analyst coming on with us. He's into space and unmanned systems. Have a good weekend, Sandy. Austin Mahler is going to join us, one of our directors and analysts at Canaccord. He's known for his deep dive analysis on the space and unmanned systems industry. Fascinating. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Ground Control to Major Tom. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare.
That would be, I guess, the scary part of space travel. You have to leave the capsule now. Wait a minute. I've just been in this little tin can for a bunch of days, and kind of cozy, finally. I do got to stretch my legs, but I heard it's kind of cold out there. Is it going to work? Is my tether going to hold on? I don't know. Wild what we have done as a species. It truly is amazing that when we as a people put our mind to anything, well, we seem to get a lot of incredible stuff accomplished. Big Brain going to spend some time with us. His name is Austin Moeller. One of our analysts at Canaccord. He's involved in paying attention to the space and unmanned systems. Beautiful resume you have, Austin. You worked under the former... It's amazing. So many American analysts seem to work for someone in the Pentagon. You guys are all connected with the Pentagon somehow. But you worked under the former Pentagon budget architect, Lieutenant General Emerson Gardner. Jack, you probably know him. You're a military man. but you received your bachelor in science in finance and global peace and security studies. I like that. Global peace. How are you making out with the global peace thing? Is that working? Austin?
Well, I mean, obviously there's significant issues in Ukraine right now, but certainly in my coverage focus right now, you know, I'm still covering some of the space names, including Spire Global, and Intuitive Machines, but also covering some of the more electric aircraft sustainability names over in what's called electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. So
I'm trying to have some fun with you here, Austin. You're getting all serious on me, buddy. I said global peace. How's that coming for you? You went serious on me. What I'm going to say to you, Austin, let's stick with this. My question, because actually it's interesting. You know, when I spend some time on Netflix, which I do a lot, and I meant to catch something about space, there was that, and I mentioned, I forgot the name of it, not the Hubble spacecraft, the other big camera.
I say Austin. Built. Austin knows it. They just launched it.
Yeah, who's that? No, they actually, but it safely landed. They're taking pictures from it, and it was a multi-billion dollar initiative. What camera am I talking about, Austin? I say that because once you see those pictures, it makes all of us 8 billion humanoids feel small. And when you feel small, you feel a little humbled. And when you're humbled, perhaps you're a little more chilled. I think that in itself is good for global peace. Eh? Austin?
I think you're referring to the James Webb Space Telescope.
Yes, that's the one. They're fascinating to watch them build it, design it, engineer it, mistake after mistake, test it, sort of, and then hope it worked, and had to wait so many years to see if their little test monkey worked, and it did. It was unbelievable. Pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, definitely incredible imagery that we've been able to get out of it, despite the, you know, 10-year plus and multi-billion-dollar development cycle on it. But it seems like the imagery that we're getting back at this point is worth the wait, I would say.
Yeah. So but you're involved in, like, it's a very cool space that you're paying attention to. Is it investable? And if it is, to what degree of risk do you have to assume? Or is there a bit of a easier way to get exposure to new frontiers without, you know, being excessively aggressive on the risk curve?
I mean, there's a number of space companies out there, including on the satellite operator side, but also on the spacecraft manufacturing side. I mean, Spire Global is a good example, where they have a fully deployed constellation of satellites that are being used to track all of the Earth's weather conditions 24 hours a day at any point on the planet. So that would be one example. I also cover Intuitive Machines, which has been building lunar landers for NASA under a contract called the Commercial Lunar Payload Services Program. But I mean, both.
What program is that?
Commercial Lunar Payload Services, or CLPS. So
that's a government initiative.
The purpose of that program. Yes, it's a NASA program. And the intent was to, instead of having NASA build a rover or a spacecraft or a lander, which usually when NASA builds it costs billions and billions of dollars, they can contract this out to a private company that can do a mission for, say, $100 to $150 million, so an order of magnitude less expensive but still collect the same data and accomplish the same mission as if NASA, JPL had designed something internally.
And your Spire Global, what does that company do?
Right. So Spire Global is what's called a remote sensing satellite operator. So they have 100 satellites that are equipped with radio antennas. And basically, when a GPS signal bounces off of the Earth and it comes back through the atmosphere, it bends a little bit as it passes through the atmosphere. This is called occultation. So the radio wave bends or occults. And basically, they figured out that based on how much it bends as it passes through the atmosphere and then returns to be received by the satellite, they can determine the exact temperature, pressure, and moisture of any point in the Earth. So they can use it for weather forecasting.
Wow. I heard of bending light. Pretty cool stuff. Hey, tell me something. Have you been to NASA?
Which NASA facility?
I don't know. How many do they have? How many are there?
I mean, there's multiple different ones. I've been to Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center many times.
That excited Jack. You know, again, he's a military.
Wait, why do you say you hear about these places? Obviously, in the news, Cape Canaveral. But the fact that the NASA, I'm not saying it's getting displaced, but maybe it's getting a little disrupted because you look at SpaceX. You mentioned other companies that are being able to do the same thing for lower costs. How are they able to do that, Austin? And do you continue to see NASA being less relevant as these private companies are, I'm going to say, more competitive in the space?
What I would say is that NASA is switching from a model of them building and designing everything internally used for a mission to they're still the government agency, but they just pay third parties to provide the spacecraft and the services for them and their astronauts and whatever payloads they might have. So it's more cost effective for them to do it that way. I mean, generally when, the government designs something, it tends to be much, much more expensive than if you have competition and a competitive bid and a contract between multiple different vendors. And so that's part of how they're able to come down significantly on the cost curve compared to like if NASA JPL scientists in California built a lunar lander or a lunar rover, and two machines could do it much less expensively.
Austin, 15 seconds for this question, then we have to call it a weekend. When do you think commercial aviation will be viable on an E? Well, I guess that'd be an EP basis, electric plane basis. Where are we at on that continuum?
Sure. So I cover a number of eVTOL companies now, electric vertical takeoff and landing, but two of them, Archer Aviation and Joby Aviation's aircraft, are expected to be certified by the FAA within the 2024 to 2025 timeframe. So after 2025, I'd expect to start seeing them flying around, at least for short distance trips.
Interesting. Keep us posted on that. That's very, very fascinating stuff. Austin Mueller, senior analyst with Canaccord, right into his deep diving analysis on space and unmanned systems, connected with the Pentagon. It's amazing to have him on our team. Delighted. I want to wish you a great weekend, my good friend there, I guess, in New York. Be safe. We'll work with you some on Monday. Friends at home, show's Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday. Jack and I bring it to you. We help people like you build wealth. And once you're wealthy and sent into retirement transition phase, we can help you harvest that money efficiently and effectively. Please, if you have any questions for Jack or I, wolfgangkline.com is where we can be had. We are here for you. Any questions for us, please don't hesitate. I want to see each and every one of you have more wealth. Tune in each and every Saturday, 6:40, Toronto. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.